Vaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So the Shrutis are telling us that they are able to understand the Supreme Absolute Truth as he's consorting with his energies, both material and spiritual. So about his being beyond the three modes and having a spiritual connection with his spiritual energies, we were talking complex analysis of the different kinds of Shrutis, those that have the modes of nature as their subject matter, and those whose subject matter is transcendental. So there are three kinds of Shrutis that have the modes of nature as their subject matter. The first kind don't refer to him directly, but give some indirect reference. The second kind talks about him directly in terms of how he dominates, how he controls the three modes of nature. The fourth kind contrasts the material existence with the spiritual existence, either denying two different ways, by denying that the material existence is the reality, and second, by equating the material existence with the higher reality that underlies it, by denying and by equating. So those are the two methods used. So, how is the Lord transcendental to the three modes? That can be understood in both of these ways, by negating and by equating. Paragraph 22. Trigunyati kramas tuba yatrapi. Transcending the domain of the three modes is accomplished, however, by both these methods. Atra trigunya nirasena tad udeshena yatra tadiya dharmak spashtam avagamyate tatra bhagavat paratvam. Thus, when his qualities are made known explicitly, that means the Supreme Person's qualities are made known explicitly by expressing them after refuting the influence of the three modes, the Shrutis aim at the personality of Godhead. So, not this, not that. It's not just material, but then what's spiritual is actually mentioned. The actual spiritual qualities of the Lord are listed. That's one method. Then we understand the Shrutis as aiming at the personality of Godhead, because they're describing actual qualities of the Supreme. But when his qualities are not revealed, yatra tu aspashtam tatra brahmaparatvam iti avagamyate vyakyatas trigunya vishayaha. And when his qualities are not revealed openly, we should understand that the Shrutis aim at Brahman. The Shrutis tell us it's none of these material things and stops there. Doesn't tell us specifically what the Absolute Truth is, doesn't describe any of its qualities, then we understand it as just aiming at Brahman. Okay. Vyakyatas trigunya vishayaha. This explains the Shrutis that have the three modes as their subject. Tadetad ajaya charato anuchade iti vyakyatam. And so also are explained the words in the verse of the prayer. Ajaya charato nuchade. They follow you. The Vedas follow you. as you sport with the material energy. But that's only one of the two kinds of shrutis. Brahmaparo ata nistrai gunyo pidvi vidaha. As far as the shrutis whose subject is beyond the three modes, it is also of two kinds. I think that they are also of two kinds. It's the shrutis in their plural. Sorry, I have to write this down. They are. Okay, sorry, I'm going back. They are also of two kinds. What are those two kinds? Brahmaparo, Bhagavat Parascha. Two different kinds of shrutis whose subject is beyond the three modes. Of two kinds, aiming at Brahman and at the personality of Godhead. Yata anando brahma ityadihi. The first example of the first is Brahman is bliss. That's aiming just at Brahman. And then natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate natatsamas cha vyadikas cha trishyate parasya shaktir vividaiva shruyate swabhaviki jnana balakriya cha. Example of the second kind, aiming at Bhagawan. He is not obliged to work and has no material senses to carry out work. No one can be found equal to him or greater. And as we hear from scripture, his own superior energy has her manifold aspects, consciousness, power, and activity that act autonomously. So again, the scriptures aiming at Bhagawan, the shrutis aiming at Bhagawan, also start by negating what's material. He doesn't have any senses. He doesn't have any work. He has nobody equal to him. Not this, not this, not that. But then it goes on to say that he does have all varieties of personal energies that are also acting personally, autonomously. Tade tad atmana charato nuchare nigamaha. So ajaya atmanas cha. He's consorting with his aja, his material energy, but also with his atma, his spiritual energy. And as he's consorting with his spiritual energy, anuchare nigamaha. The Vedas are following him. By this are explained the words. The revealed scriptures follow you as you sport with your personal energy. Okay, commentary. The shrutis draw attention to the reality above the three modes of matter in two ways. Negating what the Supreme is, not, and equating him with everything created from him. By these ways, they just begin to touch his real existence as Brahman and Bhagawan, still in reference to his involvement in material creation. Most often, these shrutis depict him impersonally as the source of all matter in life. Anando brahmeti vyajanat anandat hi eva kalu imani bhutani jayante anandena jatyani jivanti anandam prayantyabhi samvishanti. One should understand Brahman as bliss. From bliss alone, indeed, all these created beings are born. By bliss, having been born, they live. And to bliss they go to re-enter. Okay, so that's not saying much about his personality. He's just the source of everything. And he's given the name Bliss, which is a hint at personality, but doesn't really go into any, doesn't reveal much about personality. And sometimes, by describing the play of his energies, the Shrutis begin to reveal his personality. In reality, what is not a person cannot feel Ananda. It is the personality of Godhead, not his impersonal abstraction, whom the Taittiriya Upanishad presents as the Ananda Maya Purusha. The word Purusha is used by the Taittiriya Upanishad. The last line of the Shruti's first prayer is read as referring to both the Lord's contact with Maya and his eternal association with his Swarup Shakti. By splitting the words Kwachit Ajayatmana Chacharata into two separate statements, he consorts with his material energy, Kwachit Ajaya Charata, and also with his spiritual energy, Kwachit Atmana cha charataha. Remember we were talking about, I think we had it translated, sometimes the Vedas follow you. Now we're taking the sometimes and saying, sometimes you're with material energy and sometimes you're with your spiritual energy. We're taking it differently. Okay. Any questions? Did you not agree?
In your translation, in the first paragraph, last second line, this explains the Shrutis.
The commentary or the translation?
Translation.
First paragraph. This explains the Shrutis.
I don't understand the statement, how it is connected to the previous and what is the context?
That means this is the end of the explanation. The explanation started a couple of paragraphs ago. Let's say this ends the explanation. How's that? Is that clear? Okay. Let me make a note. He's announcing that he's done with explaining that those kind of shrutis. Now he's going to explain the other kind. Is that okay? He did that to help us, to tell us that he's done with one subtopic and he's moving on to the other one. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. I'm sorry.
And into bless the please they re-enter all those things.
Yes.
Similarly, the other places, Bible and other scriptures, religious scriptures, they also speak of the Lord indirectly. So this means similarity between these Shrutis and what other scriptures speak.
Okay. other scriptures are revealing something that someone has discovered about the Absolute Truth. so ultimately it has the same, that knowledge has the same original source. The Supreme reveals himself, his intelligence is embodied in the Vedas. He descends to this world in his avatars. But he can also have avatars in other countries and people start other religions based on what the Lord has revealed by his own appearance or by sending some devotee to teach spiritual philosophy. So we may have in other scriptures bona fide information that has been coming from God's representative or maybe even from God directly. But we're not denying that other scriptures can speak spiritual, authentic spiritual truth. But the origin, the original source of all such spiritual knowledge is the Vedas. So if any thing that purports to be a religious scripture, for it to be authentic, it should reflect the Vedas. If it doesn't, if it contradicts the Vedas, there's something wrong with it.
Just want to confirm my is my understanding right or wrong. So Veda sometimes they follow him when he sports with his material energy, and sometimes when he sports with his spiritual energy. Does it mean that accordingly we have shastras which describes him more or less involved in material activity, and then we have different kinds of shastras which explains him as being transcendental?
Yes. And they're very, and the scriptures that directly describe his transcendental activities are small by number, because there's a very small audience for them. Most people are not ready to hear this, so the Vedas, not much volume of the Vedas is talking directly about what the Lord does with his spiritual energy. That's segregated to the category of bhakti shastras. There are a few Upanishads which are in that category, only two or three.
Also, question about Anandamaya Purusha, because in this passage from Taittiriya Upanishad, we have no this word mentioning of Purusha. Ananda Brahma Iti Vyajanat, Ananda, and so on.
That is the, this is the...
Is some other place?
That, this one is... this quote is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, isn't it? Let me see. Ananda Brahma Ityadi, let me see, 34. Taittiriya Upanishad. Okay. The Taittiriya Upanishad talks a lot about Ananda. That statement that about Ananda, the Brahman being Ananda, or one should understand Brahman to be Ananda, that is further. More is said about that previously. This is from the third chapter of the Taittiriya Upanishad. But the second chapter already talked all about the five Purushas. Explained the difference between the body and the subtle body, or the three bodies, five bodies. The physical body, the pranic body, the mental body, the jiva, and then the supreme soul, who's the Anandamaya Purusha. That's already been discussed in the earlier chapter of the Taittiriya Upanishad. So if you're reading the whole book and not skipping to the third chapter without reading the rest of it, you already know that he's a Purusha.
I think we have to somehow clarify it in the translation, like the Taittiriya Upanishad presents as the Anandamaya Purusha, and maybe give some more exact reference. This, or just mentioned it before, it was already explained before, because question arises.
Well, okay, as already presented in the second chapter. In the Sarvasambhadani to this Sandarbha, there's a long analysis of that whole discussion of the five Purushas. So the information is available elsewhere in the book. But I'll just mention here that this is something that was said previously in the second chapter. Okay. All right. Anything else? Yes.
This category of this Shruti is Jiva Goswami's opinion, isn't it?
This is Jiva Goswami is giving it. He's not telling us that he's getting this idea from anyone else. So it's his opinion. He may have picked it up from somebody else, but he doesn't tell us.
Okay. One more question. Is it the Sarvasambhadini, you are translating every part of Sarvasambhadini?
Yes.
All Sarvasambhadini?
But we're not going to cover it in this class.
Oh, okay.
It's a whole another book. It's 8 files. More than 8 files, so it would take a couple of months to go through it. And no, I think we'll when we get to the end of this, we'll go on to something else.
Thank you.
If you want to see it, I can give you a copy. Okay, so now we move into the next paragraph. Atat shrutes tat charitvam siddham. So it is proven that the shrutis refer to him. Okay, that 22 paragraphs we've based on. Actually, we only introduced that verse from the prayers of personified Veda is halfway through, and I think in paragraph 14, the beginning of Now we're up to paragraph 22, and Jiva Goswami is declaring, okay, we've proven what we wanted to prove. It is proven that the Shrutis refer to him. They refer to him directly by their own direct word, literal meaning of their words. Sakshat Charitvam, okay, they refer to him. Now, Sakshat Charitvam Chanishtrai Gunyanam Swata Eva. Anyesham tu tad eka vakyataya gyayam. It naturally follows that those shrutis whose subject transcends the three modes refer to him directly. Of course, refer to him directly either as Brahman or as Bhagavan. We should understand that the other shrutis, on the other hand, the ones that don't, whose topics don't transcend the three modes, they refer to him by being part of a single unified message. They don't seem to talk about him. But we should understand the whole text of all the Upanishads are one big literature. We put them all together, there's a unified message. Refer to him by being part of a single unified message. Maya nirasanartam eva tad tad gunanuvada kriyate. In order to reject Maya, her various qualities are first glorified hypothetically. Paschat akandam eva tam nirasya sakshad bhagavat swarupa gunadikam nirdishyate. After this, the complete undivided form of Maya is rejected. Maya is rejected altogether. And the qualities and so on of the personality of Godhead in his original form are directly enunciated. So the Vedas, if you look at the Upanishads or even the Vedas as one big literature, this is the whole program. And different parts of that literature carry out different parts of the program. First, glorify the effects of material nature. Then deny them and reject Maya altogether. And then last, glorify the qualities of the Supreme Person. If you just look at it isolated, pick out one shruti, you're only seeing part of the program. Iti tad eka vakyata dhyotanaya sa esha eva siddhanto smin upakrama vakye samudishtaha. This, by implying that the shrutis have one unified message, is the philosophical position indicated in this introductory verse. That means this first verse of the prayers of the personified Vedas. That's what they're saying in that verse. That there's a big unified program being carried out by the Upanishads, sometimes describing the Lord's consorting with his material energy, and sometimes how he's with his spiritual energy. Tatopa samhari cha shutayas twayi hipalantyatanidasanena bhavan nidana. At the end of the prayers of the personified Vedas. And in the concluding statement as well, it is said, the Shrutis say about themselves, the Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, become successful by revealing you as their final conclusion. Shrutayas cha madhva bhashya pramanita These are such shrutis which have been cited as evidence by Madhvacharya in his Vedanta commentary, such as Nachakshur, Nashrotram, Natargo Nasmitir, Vedo Hyainam, Vedayati Ityadya. Neither the eye, nor the ear, nor logic, nor memory know him. The Vedas alone make him known. And also, there is the statement in the Shruti, in the, I think in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Aupanishadak Purusha, the Supreme Person known from the Upanishads. I think it's Gautama is asking his guru, please tell me about the Supreme Person who is known from the Upanishads. In other words, that's the purpose of the Upanishads. Describe material existence, material nature. Deny, show how material nature is not the ultimate reality. And to describe the ultimate reality as a person. So the Supreme Person is known from the Upanishads. That's the whole program of the Upanishads. Commentary. The Nishtraigunya passages of the Upanishads avoid material topics. That means the passages of the Upanishads that are beyond the material modes. They avoid material topics. But they must talk about something, or otherwise they will be meaningless. What they talk about is the transcendental reality, as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. They describe him explicitly, despite all warnings that words in the mind can have no access to him. Ordinary mind and ordinary words may be so limited, but the words of the Vedas, and they alone, are the real means for a receptive mind to come to know him. Okay, questions? Yes, ma'am.
I have a few questions. First is about the statement of Upanishada Purushaha. So does it mean that he is known only by the Upanishads? But what about Puranas, for example, especially Bhagavata Purana?
The knowledge comes from the Upanishads. It may come to you indirectly. You may get it from somebody who knows the Upanishads, even though you never saw the Upanishads. You may get it from the Bhagavatam or some other Purana. But we can say that the original source of such knowledge is the Upanishads. That's where he reveals himself, in the Shruti. The Smriti explains what's been revealed in the Shruti. Anything else? Yeah.
Okay. Ask later.
When we compare Shrutis with Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes I feel like the Vedas and Upanishads are like very inferior in the sense that they don't reveal the Lord explicitly. So what is the reason to keep the Shrutis as higher authority, and Smritis, if they are contradicting Shrutis, they should not be taken, you know, certain things are there like that. And Bhagavatam, like...
We can resolve this, since we have so much reason to put our faith, first of all, in the Bhagavatam, and consider it the highest authority, and the most perfect source of revelation of the Supreme. And that's not just our sectarian enthusiasm. We really sincerely believe that this is correct. If we had to choose between the Vedas and the Bhagavatam, we'd take the Bhagavatam. But we really don't have to pick one or the other. Earlier in the Tapasandarbha, Jiva Goswami saved us from this dilemma by explaining that actually the Bhagavatam is Shruti. You know, it has the authority of Shruti. It's just not officially, it's not externally Shruti. you know, it's not publicly Shruti, but it actually, for those who are initiated into the, you know, knowledge of the Bhagavatam, it actually has all the authority of Shruti.
But we can't tell publicly, like, you know, authoritatively, this is Shruti, isn't it? Like,
sorry?
We cannot publicly or authoritatively tell.
We do anyway. We go ahead and tell the whole world that our first authority is Bhagavatam, and everybody should accept it as the first authority. Even the Vedic Brahmins should understand that in Kali Yuga, nobody can properly understand the Vedas. Now, they've got their Vedas, and they can recite them, and they can do their rituals, but they really understand what the Vedas are saying? In Kali Yuga, people can't understand. Even great Brahmins cannot understand what the Vedas are saying. So we're promoting that everybody should take shelter of the Bhagavatam. Even if you want to insist that the first authority is the Vedas, but you only can know the Vedas with the help of the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, but the question is, even if somebody understands the Vedas, according to the statements here, that they are not going to reveal fully the personality of Godhead.
Well, not in Kali Yuga, but in other ages. In other ages, it's possible for a proper Vaishnav Brahman to get his full Krishna conscious realization by studying the Upanishads. It would be possible. In Kali Yuga, in Satya Yuga, the method of practicing Krishna consciousness is meditation. In Treta Yuga, it's performing the Vedic sacrifices, which includes worshipping the deities and the sacrifices by chanting the Vedic mantras. So the Vedas are revelation of the absolute truth of Krishna consciousness in the appropriate time and place. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, they're not working. They're out of order. Or people don't have proper access to them. Example that was given by Vidyananda Maharaj between the difference of how Shruti and Smriti reveal the truth. Suppose the temple president needs a feast cooked. So he could call in a devotee who doesn't have very much experience cooking. Then he has to explain to him in detail how to make each preparation. He's got some talent and some experience, but he doesn't really know how to put a proper Sunday feast together. So the temple president has to sit down with him for 2 hours and explain to him in exact detail what to do, what needs to be done and how to do it. But if he had an expert, experienced Sunday feast cook around, he would just call him in and tell him, I need a Sunday feast. It would be good if we had some pakoras and halibut. And that's it. In one sentence, he could say everything. So if you have the right person, you could reveal the absolute truth, point out what needs to be pointed out by saying a few words. With the proper candidate, you don't need everything made explicit. So the Vedas, to the right people in the right place and time, can reveal everything.
Okay.
But it's not obvious to us nowadays. We're, you know, we don't know the basics, so we need everything spelled out for us.
So we can say that what result a person can get by serving Bhagavatam in this age is the same of what the other ages people done with their sacrifices and meditation.
At least the same. The same and more.
Huh?
The same and more.
More in which category?
That you can... Because the... Yes, the absolute... Because the Supreme Lord has been revealed in previous ages, but the way he's being revealed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is something that hasn't been revealed in ages. You know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was revealing the absolute truth in the most confidential way. And he's doing it through preaching Srimad Bhagavatam. Part of his program. So in the hands of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, Bhagavatam has a special potency that wasn't manifest even in the Vedas in previous ages.
Just one more. Yes. We also hear that Sukadeva Goswami, I think, Sukadeva Goswami's audience were mixed audience. where so many others were also there, so you did not explicitly speak about Shukadev
or Sukadev?
I don't
know
which one.
Mm.
I think.
Okay. Yeah, okay. What's the same? Mixed audience, therefore, you didn't explicitly.
So, therefore, you didn't explain all the confidential pastimes of directly with.
This is Sukadev? Okay. Do you know where this is? Do you know who's saying this?
It's very famous, we hear all the time.
I'm not familiar with it. So I don't want to comment on it because I don't know who's saying it in what context. And is it about Sukadev?
There are
some other reasons why Sukadev didn't reveal everything. One reason is that he only had 7 days. And the Bhagavatam only supposed to have 18,000 verses. So it's impossible to describe all the details of all of Krishna's pastimes. Even the pastimes that he revealed in his Prakruta Leela, which are just a fraction, a sample of his eternal pastimes, even just that much, what he did in the course of those 125 years, you can't describe all of that in 18,000 verses in 7 days. It can't be done. So you have to be selective for that one reason. I'm not denying that. I just never heard it. That so because the audience that was sitting there, that's not his only audience. We have to consider the future, the audience in the future, the rest of Kali Yuga, the people who are going to be hearing the Bhagavatam. Sukadev is taking them into consideration also. And therefore, his presentation is a pretty conservative, careful presentation, considering a very mixed, like you say, vast mixed audience.
So my question is, just like for us, Bhagavatam is more important, even though Shrutis are higher authority, or they may be both are same, but for us Bhagavatam is important because it reveals clearly. So similarly, maybe after some time, can this be said that because Sukadev Goswami had mixed audience and he didn't reveal many things, but the other Vaishnavas books the songs of Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas or their writings, other Rasa Granthas, they are more clear, a simple example of mentioning of Srimati Radharani and things like that. So if somebody says, is it as a matter of formality we are keeping Bhagavatam is higher authority, which didn't reveal everything? I understand theoretically, but I want to know it.
Well, we should recognize, first of all, that all these books that reveal so much about Krishna's intimate pastimes presented by the followers of Lord Chaitanya, that they're all based on the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. They may go further and reveal, the personal realizations of these authors, but they are based on Bhagavatam. In a very real sense, a lot of the books are commentaries on Bhagavatams or elaborations on what's in the Bhagavatam or attempts to explain the Bhagavatam in various ways. So there's a connection with Bhagavatam. I think anybody who wants to be able to read and understand the books of the Goswamis should know Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, he's not going to understand these more advanced books. They're basing themselves on Bhagavatam, and to understand what these authors are saying, you have to understand the culture they're coming from. They're coming from the Bhagavatam culture. So to understand them, just like if you want to read Shakespeare, you have to know something about Elizabethan England and the culture. If you want to understand the books of the Goswamis, you'll have to know Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no saying that, it's not reasonable to say, we don't need the Bhagavatam, we have these nectar books. But you're not going to understand it. You'll get nothing out of those nectar books if you don't, first of all, take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam.
So I wanted to clarify about Krishna. It's about Vedas has been as one single message, one united message. So, for example, when they speak about different rituals and worship to the demigods, like Shri Yogasami, he mentioned that in one place it said that Lord Vishnu is one who put Indra, who helped Indra to be in the throne. So actually they speak that Lord Vishnu is behind, the Supreme Lord is behind all these activities. And then
this means what?
I want to understand how Vedas are one united message, because sometimes it's very difficult to see this connection between what is said in the Vedas, different prayers to the demigods and so on, how they are connected to the Lord.
We have to understand the gradual program of the Vedas. The material nature is depicted and glorified. That's one level, that's one step in the process. Faith in Indra and other demigods is encouraged. On the lowest level, this is a step up from complete materialism, to recognize that the demigods are actually controlling nature and that they are to be glorified and worshipped. And therefore the Vedic sacrifice seems to focus on the worship of these demigods. First of all, Indra. So we're looking from down from our Bhagavatam platform and saying, well, why are they worshipping Indra? We're supposed to forget Indra and worship Govardhan. But we have to understand it's part of the program. It's appropriate for people on a certain level. They have to hear that first. They have to learn respect for the Vedas, for the demigods and the sages, for Brahminical culture. Without respect for these, they're not going to have much a chance of becoming Krishna conscious. So it's one step in a very complicated program.
And then when we see that the Supreme Lord is behind all this activity, and then when we see the description of Him being transcendental, then we can see that this is the same Lord. So in this way we can see the connection between all Vedic literature, that they are describing the same one Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes.
Yeah, and in this way it's one united message.
And we can see the glorification of Indra and appreciate that Indra is an empowered representative of Krishna. So Devanam Asmi Vasavaha. Among demigods, I am Indra. That's a valid meditation, because Indra is one of Krishna's vibhutis. And if we understand him as such, then we can meditate on him and even glorify him.
So we can see Vedas as one united message in two ways. First way is we can see that there are different levels of consciousness of people, and according to these levels, there are different parts of Vedic literature, like some Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Bhakti Kanda, and so on. It's one way. And another way is when we see that all Vedas are directly or indirectly describe the same one personality of Godhead.
Yes.
So it's two ways.
Yeah.
I'm asking this question just to make things clear for me and to explain to others also. I'm continuing the thought process, that we say that Bhagavatam is our authority, and like in one purport Prabhupada says that we don't want to turn our attention to even to Vishnu forms, only to Krishna, like in Bhagavad Gita he writes.
Yes.
So our goal is Radha and Krishna.
Yes.
But we can say if not 60, 70, 50% of the Bhagavatam is Vishnu and their devotees' pastimes, number
yes.
one.
And a lot of it in the beginning is description of the creation of the universe.
Yeah, plus description of Varnashram, Dharma, negation of material
yes.
enjoyment, etc.
Yes.
So, this one. And second is the the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharya's Rasa Granthas, I've not studied them, but I don't know also, but seems like they don't describe all these things. So
some do
so,
and some don't.
Okay.
Just like Rupa Goswami, he wrote books about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna,
yeah.
but he also wrote the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, which in detail analyzes the different kinds of avatars.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book about all the expansions of Vishnu. It's not just a book about Radha Krishna. So there's the same authors wrote different kinds of books.
Okay. So my question is, just like Narada Muni chastised Vyasadev that you written so many things which involves the people more in, you know, materialistic activities. So those books have done that, just like a mother, you know, they want to gradually elevate them. So they have some impurity in them. But he wanted Bhagavatam to be purely the category of the goal of life. But still that also has people like us, sadhakas, we need to have detachment from material life and we should know what is creation. So it has also given for people oriented, you know, which has something which is not necessary for those who are highly advanced. So somebody can say that even this book is also, like Vedas are spiritual, but they are people oriented. So Bhagavatam is also people oriented, but higher than Bhagavatam is these books, like, you know, which doesn't deal with these things. So
I cannot agree, sorry.
How we can explain, how we understand this?
Well, we have to, okay, I think we can understand. We're not supposed to focus our attention ultimately on anything but Krishna. Of course, we're not up to that level yet, but that's what we're aiming at. That doesn't mean that we never pay any regard to Krishna's expansions. That's not the statement. It's not that the Bhagavatam is not going to say anything about any other incarnation. In the beginning, it said everything material, everything cheating is kicked out of the Bhagavatam. And Sridhar Swami points out that even interest in impersonal liberation is cheating. But he doesn't say, and the Bhagavatam doesn't indicate, that meditation on the different Vishnu forms, expansions of the Supreme Lord, the Swamsha expansions of Krishna, that there's anything wrong with that. That's actually perfectly appropriate. Especially for devotees who need to become purified of material attachments and misunderstandings. We can gradually understand Krishna, who's not easy to understand, by first of all understanding his various avatars. And that's the program of the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam doesn't present any karma, any jnana. It presents bhakti. But it teaches its bhakti by first of all talking about many different expansions of Krishna, and also devotees of Krishna, and even just members of his family, the whole genealogy, but focused around the avatars. The real highlights of the Bhagavatam are when the avatars of the Lord are being described. But there are 33 different avatars who are described before you get to Krishna in the 10th canto. This is part of the Bhagavatam's program, which is a purely transcendental program. There's nothing mundane. There's nothing inappropriate about focusing our attention on Krishna's expansions as a way to prepare ourselves to fully focus ourselves directly on Krishna. The aim is to focus our everything on Krishna's lotus feet, the lotus feet of Radha Krishna. But that's served by meditating on the different avatars of the Lord. But then even the perfect devotees, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are still interested in hearing the whole Bhagavatam and hearing about various devotees and various avatars, because they're Krishna's vilasas, they're his playful expansions, they're not different from him. Even in the pastimes of Krishna, the Brajbasis are sometimes talking to Krishna about his avatars or talking about his avatars, because they're connected directly to Krishna. The pastimes of Krishna's avatars are part of Krishna's pastimes.
So when we hear such statements like, I think it's Vrindavan Mahimam or things like, or even this Govardhan Ashtakam, that I want to hear about Vaikuntha, going to Vaikuntha, I reject that, things like that. So we should take that in the context of that is meant for highly advanced devotees in their...
Well, we don't want to go to Vaikuntha. Of course, some of us maybe do. But, you know, if we're on the level of Prabodhananda Saraswati, then we don't want to go to Vaikuntha.
Mm.
We don't want to go to Mathura. We don't want to step out of Vrindavan. Mm. That doesn't mean that when we hear, you know, certain cantos of the Bhagavatam, we don't want to hear them. We want to spit on them.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we reject the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
It means that we don't want to end up going to Vaikuntha.
Yeah. So, I mean.
And some of us may end up going to Vaikuntha anyway.
At the same time, the discussion of the Bhagavatam is about Vaikuntha only, like in the sense of Vishnu's and their devotees' dealings, major part of some.
Well,
extent.
Okay, so it's largely about Krishna's appearances within the material world.
Yeah. So we have to take that in understanding that for us to be purified, we need to hear these things, and then when we may come to that level.
Then we throw the Bhagavatam away?
I don't know, I won't ask you.
No, but I was making the point that even those who have reached that perfection, even Krishna himself in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're interested in hearing the whole Bhagavatam. Among the favorite pastimes that Lord Chaitanya liked to hear was the story of Dhruva Maharaj. You could say he was a mixed devotee, he was a materialistic person, and he realized Lord Vishnu and got a Vaikuntha planet in the material world. Why should we, as followers of Lord Chaitanya, be interested in that? But Lord Chaitanya was interested to hear that story over and over again.
But then Prabhupada is saying that we should not divert our attention to even Narayan forms in Gita purpose.
I think we have to understand that in the proper perspective.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean we don't want to pay any attention. It's that we don't want to spend the rest of eternity stuck in Vaikuntha. Mm-hmm. But certainly the glories of Vaikuntha deserve some of our attention.
Okay.
Especially as much as is revealed by Bhagavatam, we won't reject that much. We're students of Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is our teacher. If the teacher wants to talk about something that we don't understand why he's talking about it, still we should accept this is our teacher telling us he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, just like you go to, learn martial arts and the teacher has you sweeping the floor for a year. And you don't understand what it has to do with martial arts, but that's preparing you. The right consciousness as a student of the teacher to sweep the floor for a year. So we don't understand how Bhagavatam is preparing us to understand Krishna. Okay, we should stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Message. Email message. SMS message.
Masha.
Fast. I mean.